fucking soul! Next up on Free Radio Santa Cruz at 101.1 FM, it's Bathrobs Pierre's Broadsides. Your March 3rd, 2005 show. Stay with us. And welcome to another edition of Bathrobs Pierre's Broadsides. I'm Robert Norse, and boy, I keep saying the same thing at the beginning of every show, but it's always true, and I suppose people want to know what's cooking, so at least I'm identifying where I'm at. So we got 2 hours coming up here, civil rights on the streets here on Free Radio Santa Cruz, and that's what you're tuned to, freakradio.org and 101.1 FM. Phone number to call in is 831-427-3772. Subjects up for discussion, numerous. I'm, of course, big on issues around poverty and homelessness and war and peace issues as they affect local politics in Santa Cruz. I'm going to be talking about that a bit on today's show, as well as playing some interviews from last night's anti-war forum up on campus, which was kind of interesting. I didn't get to most of it, but I was able to talk to the main speaker and also some of the participants up there. Kind of came in late because I had to do a cop watch or two, and I was also involved with the SAFE event. That's Street Performers Against Foolish Enforcement, as I call it, or Society for Artistic Freedom and Expression, SAFE. Uh-huh. That sounds like a phone call. Let's see if we got an actual working phone here. Hi, you're on Free Radio. Can you hear me?
Oh, I think he cut me off.
Hello? Hello?
Are you there?
It sounded like he answered it, but then it cut off.
Hi, are you there? Whoops, it sounds like we are cut off there. Hopefully they will try again. We had some problems with the phone last Sunday when I was last on. I'm going to have to probably play the phone switcheroo game where I have to keep switching on the board to actually get the caller to hear me and us to be able to hear the caller, but hopefully that's going to happen. Maybe that caller will call back. Anyway, there's lots of stuff happening tonight. I want to give you kind of heads up on that. We have around town, there's an anti-war teach-in happening at 8 o'clock up on campus. That's according to the radical calendar, and indeed according to actual human beings who've confirmed it. I talked to them last night, some of them on campus, at an earlier anti-war event last night. This teach-in is, according to the radical calendar, organized by UCSC Students Against the War, and it's on Indie Media. Let's see if we can actually hear somebody. Hi, you're not yet on Free Radio, but are you there? Hey, Jim, it's not that you can't hear. I think we have studio problems. What we're going to have to do here is I'm actually talking both to you and to the general public out there. What I'm going to do is I'm going to let you talk, but it's a little clumsy, so just bear with me. You can talk, and then I'll have to... Sure, you're being brought in right now.
No, I can't hear anything.
Now, you can't hear me, but we can hear you. Go ahead.
Okay, well, I guess I'm just going to talk until I hear Robert cut me off. The main update from Area 420 in San Jose is we have another barbecue coming up on April 24th, and we're going to have Ed Rosenthal coming out to speak, so we should look at the website for that. And then we're doing a lot of political work. A lot of people in Santa Cruz are in Mike Honda's district, and we're encouraging people to write letters to Mike Honda, encouraging some new bills in the new Congress. So, you know, a lot of different stuff going on. Much less focused on the actual serving the patients and a lot more on the politics.
What actual bills have we got coming up?
Well, I think the most interesting bill is actually in the California Assembly right now. It's H.R. Now, don't quote me, but I think it's 1147. It's the hemp legalization bill. Have you talked about that yet? Or?
No, I haven't. Why don't you give us an update as best you know?
Okay, well, if people want to look this up, you can always look at, I'm just going to give a website real quick. It's the California Legislature website, so it's leginfo, leginfo.ca.gov. You would look up HR 1147 or just search on hemp. And it's actually for hemp production for fiber and hemp production for seed, and it has a lot of provisions that the hemp that's produced would be tested by the DEA to make sure no one's getting stoned, because we wouldn't want anyone to smoke any of this hemp. And, I think the other interesting part is if they actually let this go, then there's going to be a bunch of male pollen out in the air, and the outdoor marijuana growers aren't going to be very happy. So it's a mixed bag.
So why would the – hello? Still there? Oops. The perils of working with this on-and-off deal. I don't know, Jim, if you're listening on the Internet, please call back, and we can continue the conversation. I apologize to those who are listening out there, but we can, in fact, have a phone conversation. It just requires a little more finesse on my part and some patience on the part of the caller as well. Calling number here is 427-3772. We were just talking with Jim Losey of Area 420, which is a project over in San Jose to serve medical marijuana users. He does a regular annual smokeout. I think that could be him again. Hi there. You're on free radio almost. Yes, indeed. Here, let me put you on. Let me ask you first before you do. You're not on yet, but you're about to go on. We're going to keep going. Oh, I can handle you with a switch. It's just a matter of just be patient with me. I'll kind of cue you. I'll ask you a question here. You're asking where I lost you. We lost you after you gave the website for how to check out the hemp. The Honda Hemp Bill, you can talk a little more about that. And you might also want to talk, if you want to talk about the upcoming 420 event and how that's going, I'd like to hear about that too. Go ahead.
The bill wasn't put out by Mike Honda. I just mentioned it because Honda's district covers a lot of Santa Cruz as well as up here in Santa Clara County. And the Hemp Bill is going to allow for not only hemp production for fiber, but also hemp for seed. So, of course, I said this before, I don't think it went out. You know, the DEA has their fingers in it where they would be able to test this hemp and make sure that no one was going to get stoned smoking it. You know, we wouldn't want to have that. And I think that the downside to having, I mean, the good thing about industrialized hemp is that it makes us more competitive. You know, Canada has it in Vancouver or in BC, and it's an industry that California should get into. I mean, obviously, everybody in Santa Cruz knows the ecological benefits of hemp. The only downside for the outdoor pot growers is that having hemp seed production means there's going to be a lot of really bad male pollen in the air and not of a very good strain. So everybody's pot is going to go to seed. So as long as we're willing to deal with that, then let's have legalized hemp. What do you think, Robert?
I think I just cut you off again. My apologies, callers. Jim, try again. I hope after the delay you can hear me. I'm having trouble juggling the equipment. We can do it, so let's try one more time if you're up for it. I'll even turn down the ringer slightly so you don't come blasting in when you come ringing in. Let's see. I don't want to turn off the ringer. Just turn it down slightly. Hopefully we'll continue with this. Jim has been he worked a lot with the Huff and Puff experiment way back last year in the spring and summer when we tried to get together a medical marijuana giveaway, both to serve local patients and also to press the Santa Cruz City Council to take some action to reform its local city marijuana law, which makes it very difficult for anybody to open up. Though, as I mentioned in the last show, there is a upcoming group that is trying to apply and may well get in if they can satisfy the requirements. Hi, Jim. Sorry about that. You're back on the air just about now.
And if this happens again, you'll have to have you call me, and we'll try to work it out. So, you know, I heard on the delay there that I got my point out about how everybody's nice sense of me is going to go to seed if we have industrialized hemp. And if anybody wants to call in about that later, I'd sure like to hear what people think about that. You know, other perspectives are good. So the only other thing going on is there were a number of bills in the Congress last year. The State's Right to Medical Marijuana Act, I won't bore you all with the numbers. If you go to area420.com, you'll see some information about that. Everything that was in Congress last year died in committee at the end of the year. So in the 109th Congress, they have yet to introduce these bills. So we're just trying to get people to write letters, and I think that people are pretty active there in Santa Cruz. Right, Robert? Well, I don't hear you.
Yeah, I'm right here. We actually made it back to you. Well, people are active in – it's hard for me to tell. I actually do get – Andrea Tischler of the Compassion Flower Inn is working on issues. She has worked on getting the community board of supervisors – not community, I mean the county board of supervisors – to help pass the higher limits for the allowance of, you know, medical marijuana folks. I think it's 99 square feet not quite sure, you know, as far as the canopy goes, and maybe it's 3 pounds a year. And that was, I believe, passed by the soups. And there's currently working on some kind of regulations. Unfortunately, they may be modeled after the cities, which allows cannabis distribution centers, cannabis clubs to open up. But the thing that she talked about that interested me most recently, it was about a week ago, 2 weeks ago, was a conference that actually talks about shifting the focus from medical marijuana to decriminalization of marijuana on a county-by-county initiative basis in the way that the medical marijuana Proposition 215 was originally pressed by, you know, pioneer groups like folks in Santa Cruz. Any thoughts on that?
Well, I think that's an interesting idea. I learned a little bit about the, like, if you actually wanted to have an election in a county, I used to think that that was free or something like that. But I discovered that, for example, in Santa Clara County, it can cost about $300,000 to place a ballot measure on the election or on the ballot. You know, not only in terms of, you know, gathering signatures, but also I guess you have to pay for, I'm sure you probably know all this already, but you have to pay for your issue to be on the ballot. So the real challenge is for someone to find a small city. You know, I mean, I think people would be successful if they don't have the big money. Now, I'm sorry, I'm getting off point. If somebody really had the big money to do that county by county, then, yeah, that'd be an interesting idea. I'd rather see something that's more fair and equitable across the state.
I think that they can actually pass initiatives, but they can pass county laws either through the Board of Supervisors or through city ordinances, you know, on a city-by-city and county-by-county basis, and it doesn't even have to be done by initiative, or the county itself can put the initiative on the general ballot, and it doesn't cost any more than, you know, it would normally do to do a general election. Your thoughts on that?
Well, you're absolutely correct. You know, that's good. That's a good point. However, that is kind of unfair, in my opinion, that, you know, it would cost us an awful lot of money to do it. But if all five supervisors in Santa Clara County just agreed, you know, then all of the taxpayers would share the cost. I think that the previous history of cooperation from those bodies, it doesn't seem like it's likely they're going to get a whole lot more helpful. You know, the current problem is that as all these different dispensaries pop up around the state, a lot of cities are enacting moratoriums. And just saying that, hey, we're not going to have any dispensaries, period. Now, nobody, to my knowledge, has challenged this in court. Have you followed this at all?
I've noted that in Oakland they really cut back on dispensaries, and I know that there's paranoia here in Santa Cruz in that the city attorney, John Barisoni, has advised the planning department that, in his opinion, the decision eliminating the necessity defense for the Oakland Cannabis Club a couple years ago in a Supreme Court decision means that cannabis clubs are illegal at a local level, even though we have the Raich decision coming down by the Supreme Court, which currently says that they can't go after medical marijuana locally unless it's involved in interstate commerce, and, you know, medical marijuana distribution, much of it is not involved in interstate commerce.
Yeah, well now the Raich case is an interesting thing, and I'm just going to shift and talk about that for a minute. I was actually out in Washington, D.C. just shortly after they heard that case, so I was trying to do a little bit of my own lobbying. But people have to remember that the Raich case is very narrowly defined, and WHAM, to my understanding, still only has an injunction based on the outcome of the Raich case. Now, the Raich case, you know, was really defined that it's just individuals receiving it free from their caregivers. And I don't think overall the Raich case is going to make a difference one way or the other. You know, simply having marijuana is currently, you know, illegal under federal law. It's not, I mean, the dispensary model, like in San Francisco, is not going to be helped by any kind of a positive Raich decision. I don't know. Although maybe you have some more information because you're so close to WHAM.
Well, I think that the for some reason the city, well, the planning department planner I talked to, Mike Ferry in Santa Cruz, says he is going ahead with the proposal. He isn't, you know, the city attorney has not vetoed allowing a cannabis dispensary to open up based on the fact that the feds regard marijuana as illegal. And I guess that he didn't really refer to the Raich case one way or the other. Although I think actually the city attorney did say they would prefer that people wait until the Raich decision came down. And I know that Andrea Tischler has been saying that people aren't likely to invest in medical marijuana centers, or she would advise them to invest in those centers until such time as that decision came down. But as I said, there is currently a group trying to open up a center here in Harvey West Park. So that's going on. I don't know if that answers a response to what you're saying, but came to mind.
Well, that's good to hear, and I wish everybody luck. I think that, you know, of course, it's against federal law, you know, one way or the other. But, you know, of course, there is the state law, and I think the way the dispensaries, you know, should try to open is based on more of a co-op model. You know, when it's a co-op, you basically have common ownership. I mean, Santa Cruz is certainly familiar with that. But I think that, you know, it's just a hard sell. You know, I'm going to tell you a little bit about the state ID card program in a second. But in general, a lot of different government departments are using this race case unnecessarily. For example, the state was supposed to do an ID card program like a year ago or something like that, and it's been delayed and delayed and delayed. And I speak with the person in the Department of Health Services who actually is going to be running the program. Now, they're finally supposed to be going to a pilot program with that. It was supposed to be March. Now it's going to be July or June. Now, all the ID card does, I'm going to make a point, and then I want to kind of hear your response, but all the ID card does is this. It's the state verifying that you've talked to your doctor and your doctor approves of your use of marijuana. It doesn't have anything to do with actually using it. Well, even the ID card department is using the race case as an excuse to slow things down. And there's nothing in the race case that would prevent the state from moving forward. It's just an ID card program.
I don't. I'm sorry, interrupting you here. Let's see. I'm trying to kind of wrap my mind around what you just said here. No, I wouldn't think that the Rage case is terribly relevant, given that the state is, you know, authorized and, in fact, mandated to allow medical marijuana under the initiative passed in 1996 by a significant majority of the voters. They're, you know, the state enabling laws which facilitate that are based upon kind of a form of federalism where the states have some power over the situation and they're not trumped by the federal government. If the state authorities had believed that the Proposition 215 was unconstitutional or was shouldn't be followed because it was in conflict with federal law generally, then they should have acted differently from the get-go. Although I guess some state authorities did, that has not consistently been done. So I wouldn't see why this should delay their cards.
Well, no, absolutely not. And then the specifics are Prop 215 is vague, and it is the will of the people, but. The most narrow interpretation of Prop 215 is that it only authorizes you to grow it at home and smoke it at home. It doesn't exempt from the transport or sale. Now, what happened in 2003 was Senate Bill 420 in California, and of course everybody knows that 420, is the number for pot. So the politicians must be pretty hip. But that law specifically exempts people from prosecution for sales and transport. So that's the other component, I believe, that should allow these dispensaries to go forward today. You know, there's clear state law that says that you can sell it and transport it, and so and there's other things in the law that you could use as a framework. I just think that as long as people still have the fear of the federal forfeiture laws, that's the biggest problem. There was a case in Roseville where a dispensary was being run, and when they shut it down, they actually took away the commercial property from the landlord, and so things like that have made it even that much harder to open a dispensary.
Yeah, I agree with that. I mean, I don't hear anything I think I disagree with. I'm flailing a couple points I wanted to pick up on from what you were saying. I guess recently, what do you think of this idea of shifting from medical marijuana to more broadly an attack on drug war prohibition or drug prohibition, and essentially, the idea of the... Instead of fuddling around with trying to say, well, we're medical marijuana, how the rap goes. Any thought of how this is more likely to be successful? To me, it makes more sense in terms of the clear conceptual approach, and it attacks the number of people who are being arrested, over 750,000 nationwide, and I don't know how many in California. But will it fly?
I'm sorry, and just to make sure I understand what you're saying, you mean to broaden, broaden it out just to a general anti-drug war? Is that what you're saying?
Well, I'm talking an war that we're trying to oppose the war on marijuana instead of just the war on medical marijuana. We're trying to say legalize marijuana for different uses, in the same way that other herbs, drugs, spirits, and so forth are legalized.
Yeah, well, I'm sorry. I just misunderstood for a second. Yeah, because I think that, if you ask me, it should be legalized anyways. Now, I realize this isn't exactly what you're asking, but I don't think it's too much further of a, to get people to realize that alcohol is more dangerous than marijuana. But then that's just the reality of it. You and I know what's right and wrong and what should be, but then, unfortunately, there's this little thing called politics in between that. Now, I don't know. I think that, it's really hypocritical, but people just don't seem to be ready for the general marijuana legalization. I hope it's just a couple of years away, but I think that there's once people have kids, as well-intentioned as they are before they have kids, they suddenly become anti-drug warriors, and we've got to protect our kids from terrorists and marijuana. And, you know, I'm sure you've seen that yourself, and it's unfortunate, but go ahead there.
Well, I'm looking online, and I see this. I'm kind of running around Berkeley's websites on cannabis because I know while Oakland passed an advisory initiative last election kind of encouraging medical marijuana, the Berkeley voters very, very narrowly turned down a broader initiative in Berkeley. And I see a whole listing of cannabis caregiver clubs and physicians with their names, their phone numbers, their addresses, their emails. Admittedly, most of them are not local. There's Stephen Bannister in Grass Valley, Philip Denny in Lake Forest. But there's a whole bunch of people from whom it looks like you can get, well, at least 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, Todd McAree, of course. Looks like about 12 or 13 people who are willing to give their phone numbers and go public. It looks like a positive sign. I don't know whether we're going to see this replicated. Is it happening in San Jose? Is there a list of San Jose docs who are willing to give out letters of recommendation for those who need them?
Yeah, that's a funny subject that you hit on there. I'm going to have to ramble for just a minute. There was actually, let me just start by saying, and I'm not trying to plug the site too much, but if you go to area420.com and you scroll down a little bit, you'll see that there's a link for the local paper here, the Metro, wrote a couple of stories. And I'm going to get back to your other question about these people advertising publicly. I'll get to that before I'm finished here. But in the local Metro, they ran one story about all the different medical marijuana dispensary ordinances in San Jose. They mentioned me and my patient group in that story, and it's worth looking at the link. But there was a doctor's office. A guy opened up an office here called Suffering Patients. And there's another group called Medican. I know Medican has an office there in Santa Cruz. And there's... I don't want to make anybody mad here. I know people, boy, if they could call in, like if I was sitting there with you, we'd be getting people mad at what I'm about to say. But these places try to use physician's assistants to do the recommendations. So the patient never sees a doctor directly. And as much as people want it to be, it's just not clear that's proper under the law. Now, you might go get your card and get to the dispensary with that. But to really, if you're going to grow and you really want to be able to defend yourself with the police, you need to go see a doctor directly. And I know Medican and others were just charging $100, but you can go to a real doctor for $125 in San Francisco. Now, I want to touch on Suffering Patients for a second and then talk about the public doctors. These people, Suffering Patients in San Jose, were just one step short of being con men. They claimed to be nonprofit. They weren't. The owner claimed to be a lawyer. He wasn't. They're out of business. If you call them now, you have to know somebody they're just shady. But they gave everybody a bad name. Now, these doctors that you're listing off, remember that doctors don't have too much to fear. At the same time that the OCBC decision came out, or maybe even more recently, doctors under Supreme Court decision cannot be prosecuted for discussing marijuana with their patients. So for a doctor to advertise openly, and I'll make my final point here, for a doctor to advertise openly, as long as they do not knowingly know that the patient is acquiring marijuana, as long as they don't like sell pot in their office. There's a Dr. Molly Fry got in a lot of trouble because I think her husband was selling growing equipment in the office, and the DEA moved right in. But these doctors, as long as they just give a recommendation, they follow proper medical procedure, get documentation, records, and all that, then they have really nothing to fear except their own colleagues. And so go ahead there.
Well, you know, the problem that we were having here in Santa Cruz before that you were helping us with and that, you know, we're still in the middle of because we've actually had Andrea is a regular listener to this show. She's a person who needs medical marijuana, and she finds it really hard to get. It's poor people. You know, they don't have access to medical marijuana. Now, I understand up in San Francisco, I was told at least by one person who'd gotten a San Francisco medical marijuana card that there's some sliding scale that allows you to both get a card more cheaply from the public health agency and also to purchase it more cheaply. Is this true? Do you know about this?
Yeah, I mean, let me just say quickly that the San Francisco Health Department, and well, now in Santa Cruz, I'm not sure if this applies. Your own health department does cards, and I can't speak to the merits of that program. But for everybody else, the San Francisco card program is probably the best. They only charge $25 for an ID card, and you go to their office. There might be a sliding scale for Medi-Cal patients or something like that. They do actually hand you a list of the dispensaries in San Francisco. But now, getting to the second part of your question, is there a sliding scale for purchasing marijuana? There's one or two groups, I think ACT UP or somebody specifically talks about that, low-income cancer patients only. I forget who that is. But for the most part, you know, these clubs, you know, they go across the gamut from people who are really just kind of like stoners trying to help you to really, you know, profitable enterprises. And you can go to some places and get cheaper weed that's not as good. You can go to one place and spend a lot of money and get the best stuff. But I would say that really the people who are poorer, their best option is the care packages. You can't walk into those stores and negotiate on price, or at least I'm not sick enough to. And I don't think they would. I think that you just end up buying less weed or cheaper weed. Or
what do you mean by the care packages?
Yeah, thank you. Well, and I'm going to, in fact, if people are listening, I'm going to go ahead and tell you the couple places we know about that do these free care packages. As you might remember, when Area 420 was operating last year, we were doing a lot better in our production, and we were able to give, you know, a gram or two or more out here when people needed it. In fact, just yesterday, I actually delivered an ounce to a really, really sickly AIDS patient for free. But, you know, I can't do that very much right now. So in San Francisco, the main cannabis club at 14th and Mission, they're not very good, but you can get like a free gram of Mexican or something like that. Sometimes it's better. But there's another club called Mendocino Healing Alternatives, and they don't always do the care packages and stuff. I don't think that they're really known for free, but I've gone in there and gotten some great eighths for $20. And, I mean, stuff that you would think you'd pay $45 somewhere else. And so these guys at Mendo Healing Alternatives, I think they're some really cool kids that are really taking care of people as best as they can.
And where are they?
They're on Lafayette Street. In fact, you know, I don't really have my computer up right now anymore. But if you look on the, if you look at this, there's a website that Robert might be looking at. It's canormal.org. Is Robert, is that what you're looking at with the doctors?
No, actually, I was looking at Area 420. Wait a minute. Let me see. Maybe I wasn't. I'm looking at a variety of websites here. Let me double check. Cannabis. Actually, I was looking at cannabis caregiver clubs at. No, it was ocnormal.org.medical.htm. So maybe it's a normal website. I don't know. Go ahead.
Yeah, okay. I'm guessing that OC Normal is Orange County Normal. There's a Los Angeles chapter. And let me just start at square one, just in case one person out there doesn't know who Normal is. It's the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Law. They have a very effective office in Washington, D.C., and their website is at norml.org. Now, OC Normal must be Orange County Normal. Up here we have Dale Geringer, is a fantastic guy that runs California Normal out of San Francisco, and they're at canormal.org. Now, if you go there, they have two links. One is for patient groups and one is for physicians. The physician list is really extensive and covers a lot of doctors. But just to touch on your question earlier, there's not a general doctor available in Santa Clara County. If you had cancer and you had an oncologist, they might write you a note. But if you go to the canormal.org website and you look at that list, you can see that I think there's 27 stores listed there in San Francisco right now, and supposed to be a couple hundred throughout the state now. And I have a listing on there, too, right now. I am just kind of temporarily helping people out, and we're trying to provide, you know, medium cost and good quality. But I'm not really in a position to take on a lot of new patients. And, you know, as you know, we were working together for a while last year, and then I, you know, my efforts were having some difficulty. So,
well, you tried real hard, and I, you know, we had problems with our other supplier got ill and had some doubts as to what to do with our. Our Huff and Puff was kind of a pathfinder approach, and we were concerned with making a political statement as much as serving patients. But let me ask you about San Jose, because that's much closer to Santa Cruz, where our listeners, most of them, are based. Is there any place in San Jose, like a cannabis club, where you can walk in, present a card, and purchase marijuana?
No, but that is a good story, and I'm just going to again refer to those Metro articles at area420.com. The one of the Metro articles about the dispensaries mentions a guy named Kevin. Now, Kevin has a co-op up in Felton, actually. He's called Evolution, and if you go to the Cal Normal website, no, I don't think he's listed there either. Well, anyways, you're all from Santa Cruz, you know, you probably all know where Evolution is in Felton. Well, he opened a store in Mountain View for a few days. And the whole story is in the Metro article, but he had already talked to the planning department. He had sort of had their permission. He told them where the location was going to be. He opened up, and 4 days later, the police visited him. It wasn't like a crackdown. There was no guns or anything like that, but they did come to an agreement that he was too close to a school. And now Mountain View, I just, well, anyways, I tried to intervene a little bit and talk to the planning department. I know somebody in the police department there and sort of knew somebody in the planning department. But, you know, when I really sat down to talk to them, they said, well, we don't really know what to do with the dispensary. You know, it's such a new thing. And I said, yeah, it's like 8 years old, and you know, and the other law is 1 year old. And so, you know, to answer your question, you know, read that story in the Metro. It'll tell you everything about Mountain View. But that guy has never been able to reopen in Mountain View. I think, and let me finish up by saying, I think he's on the verge of opening a place in Mountain View finally.
I think you're talking about, of course, the San Jose Metro, not the Santa Cruz Metro, right?
Yeah, that's right. I'm sorry. It is the San Jose Metro. And again, you have to find the article archive. And so, you know, I just have those links on my site. It's the easiest thing.
Yeah, I think people can get it pretty easily. In fact, you can actually get a hard copy by going into the Santa Cruz Metro office downtown. They'll probably give you a copy if it's not too, you know, distant. And also, of course, as you say, I'm sure it's online. We're talking with Jim Losey of Area 420 over in San Jose through this rather primitive phone setup. And folks can get in touch with him by going online to, is it www.area420.org?
No, it's it's area420, but it's .com.
Oops, thank you.
I actually own the .org, too. And then there's some guy who's a network engineer in Minnesota who has nothing to do with marijuana, but he registered area420.net, and it's his personal blog. I don't understand why, but anyways, we're area420.com.
Wow. Well, Jim, thank you. Is there anything more, anything upcoming that people should be aware of in the next month, events, stuff that is particularly publicly informative? I do want to remind people that it's 7 o'clock. Let me make sure I have that right. I believe it's 7 o'clock tonight. Let me look on my website to be sure here. ACLU locally, I think it's 7 o'clock. It has a special drug policy forum, which is happening at the Holy Cross Church, and that is, I'll give you, I hope most folks know where the Holy Cross Church is, because I know where it is, but I can't quite describe it. It's the Holy Cross Church. You've got to have to find it either some other way than ask. It's on High Street, Jim says. You're talking to me right now. You're not on the air, but you're about to go on. I'm looking for the little deal on the Indie Media website, the little blurb that would give a fuller description of this event. And it's an interesting sounding event. I've written some critical commentary on it as well. I'm having trouble locating the exact. Here it is: America's Failed Drug War, Santa Cruz, and the National Debate. It's ACLU's DRLP, which is the drug law reform project, conducts litigation and public education nationwide to challenge civil liberties and civil rights violations arising from current drug law and policies. They have three active cases, one representing 10 African Americans in Heme, Texas, arrested as a part of a drug sweep, in which the local drug task force arrested almost 15% of the town's young black men. I remember that case, pretty heavy. And there's several other cases. Santa Cruz County ACLU is hosting this group, and, you know, I'm always glad when they talk about the drug war, but my response, and here we go, it's 126 High Street is the address for those who want to go to Santa Cruz. Starts at 7 o'clock. It's free. I'm encouraging folks to go up and ask them what they're doing about the local drug war. What about the drug war prisoners who are sitting in jail in Santa Cruz? How about, you know, the priorities of our DA, Bob Lee, and our city council, which still hasn't made marijuana arrests the lowest priority? Is that a good idea in your mind? Does that have any bearing on things? What do you think, Jim?
Well, of course, making marijuana arrest the lowest priority. I mean, that's they tried it in Amsterdam, and it's working pretty good over there. And they have a really clean separation. You know, they still go after hard drugs in Amsterdam. Everybody thinks it's all a college campus. But, you know, there's so many examples of what happens when you decriminalize marijuana possession. You take a whole class of people, and you make them normal citizens again. They don't, you know, they might actually like the system more if you didn't criminalize them. What do you think?
Oh, I think it's great. I'm just wondering. I know Berkeley decriminalized decriminalized marijuana prosecutions generally in 1979, and I'm not aware what kind of impact it actually had on the Berkeley Police Department. A lot of police departments don't pay much attention even to their local city councils. They say it's state law, you know, get fucked, and I don't know what's going on with that. I know that, you know, I'm sure there's going to be a lot of good things that will be said about you know, ending the drug war nationally, just like they say a lot of good things about ending the Patriot Act, as they did here at an ACLU forum way back in April last year. But when it comes to getting Mayor Mike Rotkin, who is also on the board of directors of the ACLU, to support legislation, let's say, penalizes city officials who collude with the Patriot Act or taking some local action that would have some real impact on the drug war, you're going to find that they're, you know, busy doing something else or, you know, have some quick excuse as to why they can't proceed. That's what we've found.
Yeah, no, it's all pretty frustrating. You know, I know what you're saying there, but, you know, these politicians, they always have an excuse. You know, again, the state health department, you know, it's been 3 months at a time, you know, and I know the people individually involved with the project are trying to move it forward, but, you know, they all have excuses. And, you know, there's always something else. We have a budget crunch. We have this. We have that. We can't do anything about it. You know, it's anyways, can I talk a little more about the barbecue?
Why not?
Okay. Well, you know, we had a pretty good attendance of Santa Cruz people at last year's barbecue, and we'd like to see it again. And, you know, don't forget, when we talk about, you know, some of these things, we are going to have the letters out there for people to sign, or you could download them off the website. But we are going to have Ed Rosenthal speaking at 2 o'clock. And let me just give the particulars. It's April 24th in Vasona Lake Park, and it's going to be really nice. We'll have this band playing the Brunos at 1 p.m. and 3 p.m., and we'll have the barbecue going, and we'll have some stuff for the vegetarians, too. And I think that, you know, it's a political event. Ed Rosenthal's not there to talk about how to grow pot. He's there to talk about his federal trial, and he's there to talk about Green Aid, his nonprofit.
Will people be toking up?
Well, you know, certainly we're not there to provide an atmosphere of limiting people's personal freedom. So, I mean, if, you know, somebody has a medical marijuana note, then I'm sure that they would be fearless about it. And if somebody just wants to smoke a joint, I'm not sure that I can stop them.
That sounds good to me. I'm wondering, again, if people don't quite get the location, they can go online to www.area420.com.
Like, it rhymes with dot bomb. Yeah, so yeah, www.area420.com. Yeah, it's just going to be a good time. You know, it's not like a high production value. We're going to have a head talk and the band play, but it's going to really be relaxing. And, you know, Vasona Park is a nice place. It's right in the middle of Los Gatos. A little hard to find, so make sure you get your maps. And if you have any questions, I'm going to give my – I do have a Santa Cruz number. I mean, it's an 831 area code number. If people have questions, I'm going to give the number here. It's 831-334-0830, 831-334-0830. And there's information about the barbecue there. So,
that's great, Jim. We've been talking with Jim Losey of Area 420, who you want to say something else, Jim? Go ahead.
Oh, I'm sorry to interrupt you. I was just trying to say quietly that I was going to drop off and let you keep going unless you have any more questions.
Oh, okay. Well, thanks for being with us. You can drop off at any time. Just stay tuned. Alrighty. And that was Jim Losey in, I presume, San Jose or thereabouts calling in. You are tuned to Free Radio 101.1 FM and www.freakradio.org. I'm Robert Norse, and this is Bathrobes, Piers, Broadsides. And the call-in number and phone lines are open is 427-3772. There's also a Pages in Color website you can whip on to if you'd like to. It's www.pagesincolor.com, and you can ask questions there, and I will pass on those questions to everybody else, in case you can't get through on the phone or in case you prefer to proceed that way. So again, as I said, there's an event coming up at Holy Cross Church at 7 o'clock, 126 High Street, if you're interested in that. There's another event coming up at 8 o'clock on campus, and let me double-check on that on-campus event. That is happening. It's called an anti-war teach-in. And let's see if I can, again, I'll repeat the instructions for that for those who want to go up there. I think I'm going to check that event out. I went up to campus last night, and as I said, I spoke to some of the students up there. It's UCSC Students Against the War, Take Action, Empower Yourself, Come to a Mass Any War event, End Military Recruitment, End Weapons Research and Surveillance of International Students at UCSC, 8 p.m. Thursday tonight, Classroom Unit 2, UCSC. That doesn't really tell us which college it's at. Maybe it's, maybe somebody who's listening in might know exactly where that is. I'm going to have some trouble wandering around trying to find it. There is an email contact, although I don't think they're going to be on the email, but they might be UCSC Anti-War, all one word, all small letters, UCSC Anti-War at yahoo.com. So that's happening tonight, and I'm going to try to be finding it later tonight between 8 and 10. And one of the reasons I'm going to be looking for it is because there's an event happening tomorrow which has gotten some publicity. It's this peace event that has happened almost every week. Well, has happened every week. Women in Black and Santa Cruz Peace Coalition and Code Pink and just independent activists, sometimes HUF, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom activists with their vigil against two wars, show up. That has been at Ocean and Water Street, but 3 weeks ago, 39 cities on the California coast, according to the Indie Media story, www.santacruz.indiemedia.org, which I'm looking at right now, held a kind of a synchronized rally, according to the story. This is on February 19th, along an 800-mile stretch of Highway 1 from the Oregon border all the way down to San Diego. Despite intermittent rains, and as you can see out there, it's raining now, and probably may well be raining tomorrow night, and a moderate wind, 15 Santa Cruz residents stood for 2 hours on the Brantz 40 overpass, facing the north and southbound lanes of Highway 1. Traffic with their peace flags and banners. Good time to stand because most of the traffic is sort of crawling along anyway and gives people a chance to read signs and throw tomatoes or, give the peace sign, whatever they want to do. Maybe jump out of their cars and have a little tea and sympathy. Who knows? A little singing in the streets might be nice. But at least it presents a visible presence against a war that is continuing and seems to be escalating in magnitude every day. There's no slowdown in the brutality and violence, the repression and the insurrection in Iraq. The report, there's a lengthy report from the what happened. I'm going to read some of it online. You can go check it out. Sherry Connable wrote a lengthy letter about the issue, which I think is quite illuminating. I'm going to read it. She published this letter on March 1st, and she wrote it to an attorney, Nathan Benjamin, one of the attorneys who represented Amy Courtney and Cassandra Brown, two activists who challenged Caltrans' policy of banning all banners held off the overpasses or draped over the overpasses other than American flags after 9/11. After 9/11, you may remember there were American flags over some overpasses. Some people had some other signs they wanted to put up, like, why the hell are you bombing so many Afghanis? Not along those lines, or let's pause briefly before we shred the Constitution and jump into our SS uniforms. That didn't go over too well with Caltrans. They tried to ban some banners and allow others. And what happened was that Amy and Cassandra Brown were taken to court by Caltrans, or vice versa. I'm not quite sure. I don't remember whether it was one or the other. I think it was Caltrans taking them to court. No, maybe they took Caltrans to court. In any case, they both went to court. And Nathan Benjamin was one of the attorneys and won a lawsuit, which eventually said you got to allow all banners or none. And I think Caltrans ended up banning banners, which is typical. Anyway, Sherry Connable's letter to Nathan went as follows. Dear Nathan, I was part of a group that joined a protest on February 19th called California One for Peace that was coordinated in about 45 communities up and down the California and Oregon coasts along Highway 1. We chose to vigil on the overpass above 1, where Brantz 40 Avenue crosses the freeway, and I guess they're going to be back again tomorrow. We hung some signs on the fencing with bungee cords and held others. First, a CHP officer came along and reminded us that we had to take all our signs with us when we left. A little later, two SCPD officers showed up, insisting we could hold signs but not attach them to the fencing. One even threatened me with a citation when I said I thought she was wrong. Anyway, after two more SCPD officers arrived, plus a CHP officer, in about 35 minutes of consultation, they decided we were right and we were lawfully executing our First Amendment rights. The parting comment of Sergeant Warren Berry was, being here is your First Amendment right. Enjoy it to the fullest. So, and a little bit, I'm too clear about this because I've had discussions with Joe Williams, a local peace activist with the Peace Coalition, who's also been researching this issue extensively. And I'm not quite clear whether I think it's okay to attach a banner while you're there, but not to leave it unattended, or whether you can't attach a banner, but you can hold it. There's some disputes about that. But in any case, reading on, the Sergeant Warren Berry, the SCPD, also gave us a copy of the sections of the law that state you may not hold a sign that resembles or replicates a traffic control device or that in any way covers or interferes with any traffic signs, so that we should be aware of sections 21465, 21466, 21466.5, and 21467 of the California Vehicle Code. We returned again this past Friday, that's about almost a week ago now, to the same location from 5 to 6:30 p.m., and we have a weekly peace vigil at that time and decided to move it to that location since the slowed-down rush hour traffic provides a great audience. This time a new CHP officer showed up, sorry I did not get her name, and as she drove up on her loudspeaker said that this is a lawful order to remove your signs immediately. She was pretty aggressive at first, but got more friendly as she saw we were not going to be easily intimidated. We told her of the previous week and our contact with law officials, and I mentioned that I had been in touch with the chief of the Santa Cruz police, and he knew we would be there. She insisted we were creating a traffic hazard because people were looking at our signs and banners, and that she had the right to disband any traffic hazard at any time and could remove our signs if she so chose. She also insisted the SCPD had no jurisdiction over that location. We had a number of different conversations with her over the next 10 minutes or so, and finally she went to her car, spent about half an hour, and then cited section 21350 of the vehicle code, see below, and told us the only way we could lawfully display a sign was to get a permit from Caltrans. I do not see that this particular section and that particular section and the other sections do not prohibit what we were doing. Can you give us, again, this is a letter addressed to an attorney, your opinion on this? We've been vigiling at the corner of Ocean and Water Streets every Friday for 3.5 years. There is also rush hour tourist traffic there, and clearly folks do look at our signs. We want to continue at the Brands 40 location. Do you think we're doing this lawful or that it should be? I'm happy to get a ticket or arrested, as I think are a couple of others, in order to push the issue, but I think she was simply wrong. Your prompt reply would be most helpful. And apparently Sherry was not able to get a response from the attorney that she wrote a letter to. And so she wrote a letter yesterday, which I guess went as follows. Her letter went, Dear friends and comrades, alert, new location, Friday peace vigil. There has been some difficulty with the CHP and Caltrans at the overpass of Brands 40 where we wanted to have our Friday peace vigil. It's a long story still in process, including trying to get some help and opinions from attorneys. Women in Black and many others will be returning to the corner of Ocean and Water Streets from 5 to 6 p.m. starting this Friday, March 4th, for the vigil. Folks who choose to go to the Brands 40 overpass, and I'm going to be one of those tomorrow, or any other overpass above the freeway to display signs should be aware that you may be contacted by the CHP. They might confiscate any signs or banners on display, issue tickets, or arrest folks. What is actually legal is unclear, and we are still trying to sort it out. Please make your own best decision. Join us in one location or the other. The majority of folks will most likely be at Ocean and Water. Peace now and forever. And the person who posted this is a guy called Arthur D. He took Sherry's email, apparently, and put it online or on the Indie Media website, and he also added, protesters have abandoned the Brands 40 overpass, surrendering their First Amendment right to CHP and Caltrans in a sad move sure to have chilling effect on free speech in Santa Cruz. Anti-war activists have retreated from the Highway 1 Brands 40 overpass, taking their message with them and abandoning their free speech rights, and some would say abandoning Iraq. While bombs continue to explode in occupied Iraq, killing innocent women and children, peace protesters in Santa Cruz backed down from their cause and knuckled under to the threat of jaywalking tickets and other petty harassment by CHP goons acting in clear support for the war against Iraq. Officers have cleared the bridge of any war protesters using the transparent new excuse of directing traffic. Some of this is not exactly accurate. I don't think Arthur D. is accurate. They didn't really clear it. They claimed that the signs were, what was the phrase? It wasn't distracting or something, but yeah, I mean they are attempting to interfere. It seems to be clear. Arthur D. continues, protesters, rather than stand their ground and stand with their cause and with the people of Iraq, have chosen instead to cooperate with the police and take their protests back to the previous less effective but government-approved location. Without any citations being issued, this latest misapplication of the law is unlikely to be tested and beaten in court, leaving the police as victors by default and the cause of peace less heard. Now, I think this concern that Arthur D. has a legitimate one. In fact, I was so kind of kept swept away by his rhetoric that I decided unilaterally after I went up to UCSC campus last night in the teach-in, or it wasn't a teach-in, it was a forum on the war that they had. I decided to announce I was going to be there with a sign, even if nobody else was, and I will tomorrow, even if it's raining. I better have an umbrella and bundle up. But you too, if you show up. But in fact, Sherry didn't say that everybody was not going there. She said that some were going to be back at the water and ocean. It's too bad that some people are choosing not to be in solidarity, because you can be on that overpass without holding up a sign. You don't have to, you know, a few people obviously are going to be choosing to hold up signs, and if the police choose to interfere with them, then there'll be whatever results from that interference with the First Amendment. But you don't have to risk arrest if you don't want to, and I think it would be nice if there were a broader number of people up there on the overpass at Brands of 40. That would be cool. And who knows? Maybe people will show up there as well. I know I've heard some are, and I said some students told me last night they were going to. I'm going to encourage people to do it. And if anybody goes to this, or perhaps is already at this, ACLU rally on the drug war, please mention the Iraqi situation, the protest locally. That's my big thing, you see. I feel there's all this very exciting intellectual discussion about national issues and letters to your congressman and all that, which is fine. You know, Ralph Nader was urging that at one of his recent appearances here. But it's also quite relevant to act really locally and, you know, contact people like Mayor Rotkin, Vice Mayor Cynthia Matthews, where they can actually do things. Like, they have some control over what the Santa Cruz Police Department does, in theory. I mean, it's true the chief of police controls it through the city manager, but the city council can recommend different things, and they can make their opinion known. Hence, when the police were harassing activists downtown in the election of 2002 under the direction of Sergeant Butchie Baker, they backed off when the Green Party came to Santa Cruz City Council and made some concerns known, some Green Party activists. Green Party, to its discredit locally, has never censored Green Party phony Tim Fitzmaurice, who has been mayor and vice mayor and is still on the city council, for his abominable anti-homeless record, which continues to this day. Although it has to be said, this shows just how bad things are. In the current lineup, Fitzmaurice looks like a liberal with the Rotkin majority running the city council. Rotkin, Matthews, Coonerty, and the turncoat Madrigal on the city council. So, but anyway, I'm talking about the Santa Cruz peace protest happening tomorrow on the overpass. And then again, the action that's happening up at Classroom 2 tonight, wherever the hell that might be. I hope folks can find it if they wander up to campus. I also want to point out that usually this is being broadcast, the show is being broadcast and goes through a radio downtown at the Huff Table. But since it's good weather for ducks and dolphins, but not for ordinary people out there in the rain, the hardy Huff activists have moved indoors after, I guess, distributing a few peanut butter sandwiches, and they aren't out there, as far as I know, with the radio. And so my apologies to those who would be or looking around for a radio to listen to this show to and can't find one because we're not there out in front of borders where we usually are, us Huffsters. So that's that. I'm going to be, as I said, up on campus later tonight, and I'm also going to be at this rally tomorrow at 5, or this sign-holding event, which isn't really that big a deal. It's been done for years. Now suddenly it's verboten. It's just, you know, what the only time we react is when the right gets more repressive. It's kind of strange. I mean, but again, there's some small indications of a spring happening here of a sort, kind of a flowering of protests. Maybe things are going to change. We got this events happening on campus. We've got your 12 to 2 peace rally downtown that happens. It's not really a peace rally. It's two or three people holding up peace signs in front of New Leaf Market, supported by some SAFE performers, Society for Artistic Freedom and Expression. So check that out on Sunday. And, of course, Huff, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, has been having its weekly vigil against two wars. Not tonight, but usually it's Wednesday and Thursday right there in the Borders New Leaf area between 6 and 8 and then on Wednesdays later into the evening. I think it's time now, however, for a brief Well, how about an interview or two from the street after this musical break?
Now, that's a sweet lady. She's devoted and sincere deep down in her heart. But I just can't help but feel that she just might be a teeny weeny bit misled. You see, she wheels a baby carriage packed with Bibles on my block. And you can hear her any day of the week yelling and screaming at the top of her voice. Lord have mercy! Listen, could you please tell me why the Lord would even want to have mercy? Mercy on garbage? Mercy on filth? Mercy and shame be on the Lord if he got to hang out in a place like this. If he can't do no better than that, he need to give up the job. Now, do I be God? I would live high and mighty. And I would thunder and lightning all over this city till I made it good enough for my grand and heavenly self. And I want you to hurry up and believe me when I tell you that you won't catch me trotting out to the outskirts of town to dwell in nobody's suburbs. Because you know better than I that that same mess that gripped me here would grab me when I got out there. No, you can't run out on what's going today. Just can't do it no matter how hard you try. You got to deal with the situation here and now. Because do you don't. Yeah. This whole thing will blow right up in your face. Bam! Woo! And then what you gonna have left?
Nothing, honey.
Now, she ain't too far from wrong. You just might have a few people left. Just a few. Besides the Chinese. And they'll start all over again. Scratching at bones. Living in caves. Scratching in the dirt. And y'all know that's even worse than living on my block. No, you got to deal with this situation right here and now or forget the world was ever born.
Yeah, see that. That's it.
Now, children, do I be gone? There'd be a few things I would not do. I wouldn't tear down the rotten building. I wouldn't kill the rats and roaches. And I wouldn't run off to junkies.
No, Jesus!
No, let them stay. Let them all stay. Let more in if they want. Anybody, everybody, junkies, come right on in. If you have just got to mess up your life and kill yourself, that's your business, baby. Your life, not mine. Oh, children! Do I be God? Do you know that I would open an annex to the post office? And sell dope like stamps.
Oh, yeah.
8 cents a lick.
Yeah.
65 cents special delivery for the few of you that can't stand to wait your turn in line.
Yeah.
Price a fix so that you can afford to buy it instead of robbing me and messing me around.
Yeah.
Then I'd get along down to taking care of the rats and the roaches.
Yeah.
Shouldn't be too hard to kill them either.
No.
I wonder if you didn't know about it, that the Pentagon over there in Washington got all kind of gas and germs.
Yes, they do.
Oh, you know about it. For years, they've been using them on people. So they ought to be able to wipe out a colony of body rats and bitty bugs. Oh, yes. Don't you know that I would clear me some land?
Well, tell it, preacher, tell it.
And I would begin construction on a high-rise in high-rise.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm talking about one that's really high. Where there's room enough for people.
Yeah.
Go to sleep in the sky. Lay your head down on a cloud. Now, if your cloud pillar happened to be a little too bumpy, reach on back and sprinkle some moon water on that cloud pillar and iron it all out. I'm going up there.
Well,
said I'm going up there. Yeah. Cause that crowd belongs. Can't you just see me?
Just
can't you just see me walking and talking with the angels on the glory throughway? I will say howdy, brother and sister angel. And they'll know to say, what's going on, boss? I tell them, I just got back up here from a visit to a place called Earth. Earth, they say, what's that? Well, I tell them it's a place full of dirt and fuck-ups. Dirt, they say, what's that? And fuck-ups. We got only fuck-ins up here. And they're good. And they're free. And they're often. I intend to fly higher. Bottles and crap into a golden medallion. Circling and swinging, just winging my way. Glory!
Amen.
If all the seas were one sea, what a great sea that be. If all the slums were one slum, what a great slum that would be. And if all the accents were one act, what a great act that would be. Thank you.
20 to 8 on March 2nd, 2005. I'm here at the, between Cafe Campesino and Alfresco's. Safe Event 57 is happening. And an officer is requesting that an individual he's ticketing sign a citation. Another officer is standing by. And we have three other individuals observing this. Officer Albert here is ticketing, and Officer Butler is standing by.
Why didn't you get that done?
Kind of hard to hear, but I'm going to do.
You took him to Dominican off of Soquel when he was going the opposite way.
I took it right on the front. You know, actually, the court costs here for the clerical fees, for like them showing up, put your name on the docket, and all that. $100, whether you did it or not. If I get found not guilty, it's $100. I don't want to pay $100. I already paid the fine for the ticket.
What's your name?
I don't want to be in there.
Do you want to be interviewed about this? What happened?
You seen what happened?
I haven't seen what happened. I don't know what's going on.
I also got to go back to court to go pay for
What were you ticketed for?
For driving without a valid operator's license or suspended license.
What were the circumstances?
I walked to a vehicle where my friend had called me on the phone saying he was sick and having abdominal cramps. He was in the hospital 2 days ago, so he needed to go to the hospital. So I ran down the street, got in the car. I left the parking lot. But for him to think my story is credible, he said I had to take a left. I took a right on Front Street, like where it loops around Pacific Avenue, went up Pacific Avenue to go to San Jose Park to pick her up. Rather than taking Front Street automatically.
Now, is your friend who was ill with you here now? Or?
No, he's obviously not with me here now.
He's sick
right now. He's just got out of the hospital like a little bit ago. I just can't pick him up. I drove from the hospital to pick him up. Fuck that guy. I'm driving when I leave here. He's in my pocket. But
under emergency circumstances, even though you don't have a license, you needed to do that?
Yeah, I mean, like, I was going to call an ambulance. We can't afford to go to ambulances. And a lot of us aren't legitimate people. We only need to have the police involved and the ambulance drivers involved. Any 911 is not a thing that I live by. You know what I mean?
Did you get your friend to the hospital safely?
Yes, I did. I banged up all traffic laws in the process of speeding on Soquel, the fast cars.
Well, my suggestion to you is to get some kind of an account from Dominican that you actually got him there, and then bring that into the court.
I just got a motherfucking ticket for driving the
line. There you have it. And that's the downside. Here's the upside. Safe 57. It's Dueling Mics here. I'm inside the New Leaf Market with KZSC reporter
David Lee.
And David, you came to a Huff meeting earlier today down at Baker Square at the Cock Crew early in the morning. What'd you think of the meeting?
I was actually surprised to see homeless people there, to be honest. I was surprised to see people there that that had been affected by what's going on.
What did you expect?
I'm not sure. I think I expected more people, to be honest. I expected this to be an issue that concerns a lot more people. In fact, I found it really disturbing that there aren't more people involved with this.
Yeah, there were about, 8 to 10 of us at different points.
Yeah. Yeah, but I mean, all in all, it seems like... It seems like a lot of you guys really are working hard to fix some of this. I don't know.
Well, you stayed through most of the meeting. You didn't fall asleep or wander off.
It's true.
It lasted from 8 to 10:30.
We're
pausing in this tape to take a phone call from Ralph Myberg of... Santa Cruzans for, is it Responsible Progress? What the heck is it?
For Responsible Planning.
I can hear you, and we're going to be doing a little switching around because we're having equipment problems, but just give it a kind of brief pause when I turn it over to you, and we'll go for the gusto. So, Ralph, you've got it. How many days left for the referendum to overturn City Council's support for the Santa Cruz Coast Hotel?
Well, to put it on for the ballot, for an election, we're calling for the council to either rescind their vote or put this up for the vote of the people. We have until March the 10th, 5 p.m., to turn in approximately 4,000 registered voters at their addresses that they registered. It's a very precise document that's checked out by the clerk, city clerk, and I guess even county election officials for absolute legitimacy. So it's a daunting task, but I believe it's going very, very well. We have a lot of volunteers out on the street, and
we also have a lot of rain that's kind of interfering. And how's it going? In terms of numbers, how are you doing?
I don't have exact numbers, Robert, but I think it's going really well. The rain's not so much a problem. There's people that have been employed as blockers that are following our signature gatherers and trying to persuade people through pamphlets and verbal interference to not sign. And we're finding it sort of funny. More than anything else, although in some cases a little agrarious. But it sort of signifies a level of desperation by the proponents of this huge development that they are afraid of a vote of the people. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we found it interesting. I don't know if you've had an opportunity to read some of the ads they've put in the local newspapers. It's very slanted information.
I've seen some of the ads talking about. I've seen some of the ads talking about, you know, how to withdraw your signature from the referendum. I guess they have ads in the Fisher App Live and other places, campus newspapers. Has that happened much? Have many people withdrawn their signatures? Say that again.
I don't know if a single person that's done that. I don't think it has any real effect. It shows, really, as I said, a certain desperation on their part, and you know, the people I've been amongst the volunteers collecting signatures, people that sign understand the issues, they want to stay in it, they don't automatically trust government decisions, they want thorough transparency. So I think we have all the virtues of participatory democracy on our side, and for someone to simply say, no, we don't think people have the right to comment on this very critical development, you know, with all the implications. Hmm. I don't think people take that.
Well, the reason I've supported it in the past, aside from the substance of the issue, is my concern about the staff of the city under Dick Wilson and John Barisoni essentially kind of running the show. And often this happens with a, you know, almost unanimous city council just rolling down the road, you know, voting for police overruns on the police station, for example, huge amounts of money spent on the police department, elimination of protections for poor people downtown, refusal to, well, destruction of rent control was done by a almost unanimous city council, unanimous in Clearview Court, missing one vote in the De Anza overturn. And I'd like to see the citizenry getting up on its hind legs and saying, no, thank you. Here's an initiative. Let's have a vote.
Yeah, you know, it encourages a new form of activism. And, you know, as I say, the people that we've contacted have encouraged us a lot. And I think this kind of activism is very healthy for the community. So, you know, there's a lot of complex issues. The one thing, going back to what you said about the city administration having a lot of power, yeah, we're institutionally, the way we have a very strong city manager and a relatively weak city council with a non-elected mayor, you know, people who have studied institutional power arrangements recognize that by the patronage, the information flow, the longevity, and all those other things that belong on the side of the city administration, the civil service, it creates an immense amount of power in creating public policy. So So, yeah, we have a real problem with that. And I think in Santa Cruz especially, we don't have a very progressive city government.
Ralph, do you have a number that people can call that if they want to get involved in this petition gathering? Are you still looking for people to gather signatures or to sign their name if they're city voters who are registered within the city of Santa Cruz?
Yeah, you know, Bill Malone at 420-1133 is still handing out the blank forms. It takes a little instruction on how to do it because, again, it's very precise. It has to be done by an eligible city voter, and the only signatures that count are those of actual registered voters in the city, in the city limits. But sure, you know, more than anything else, we're encouraging people to get out and sign these petitions. There's going to be people this weekend between 1 and 4 downtown in front of the O'Neills. There's probably going to be music and quite a celebration, I think, on Sunday as we gather in signatures and sort of, you know, just celebrate this opportunity to really have a direct influence on decisions that are being made in Santa Cruz that will affect us. And
yeah, I understand that the Safe Society for Artistic Freedom and Expression singers were out there last Sunday or Saturday, I guess, supporting you all. I only hope that they will find some support themselves because we have the onerous downtown ordinances that I'm afraid some of the very same people who are supporting your initiative, as Fitzmaurice, Riley, Porter, helped to give us the kind of repressive laws, the destruction of police oversight by Citizen Police Review. All these folks, unfortunately, are part of your team in this case, although there are obviously some people on the other side who are part of that same, I would call, malignant team. Any prospects for, you know, us on broader issues, you think, or do you don't want to look that far?
You know, Robert, tell you the truth, I'm concerned about broader issues. I'm very focused on this simply because of the daunting timeline. But, you know, I've always been interested in public spaces and preserving them. And I know there's complex issues out there, but to be very honest, I'm real focused on this because getting 4,000 signatures in such a short time.
It's kind of a hard thing to do. You know, the next city council agenda, I think, is coming out this evening. I wasn't able to pick it up. Do you have any sense of anything that's going to be on the agenda on Tuesday that people might be interested in knowing about?
No, I haven't read it, and I actually don't know.
No problem. We've been talking with Ralph Myberg. Ralph, any final words?
Yeah, you know, I think that when people read the kind of statements coming out from the proponents of the hotel, that they should be very careful to analyze it correctly. For example, one statement that I find absolutely amazing, because I would hope that we would have an intelligent community discussion, and because the city's involved, there would be truth and transparency. One statement they're making is that this project will bring in $2.7 million a year, and the reality of it is $2.2 to $2.3 million of that is already set aside to pay off debt. So, you know, that's a gross misrepresentation. It's purposeful. There's other things that I personally feel almost humorous, that they consider this a question of social justice. And for me, creating an additional 35 service jobs, which are low-paying jobs, they primarily maids, kitchen help, janitorial, and we do need those jobs for people, but to state that creating those 35 jobs to serve $300 a night clientele is an issue of social justice, I mean, that pretty much was the argument in South Africa about domestic labor. So I know it's a complex question and issue, but it certainly doesn't raise to this being some validation of social justice.
We're talking with Ralph Myberg. Got to run on you, Ralph, but I appreciate your calling in. Hey, thank you. Bye-bye. And that was Ralph Myberg. Again, the referendum trying to make the ballot for overturning the city council's vote to press on with the multi-million dollar bucks to the Northwest Hospitality Group to tear down one hotel, build up another parking lot, dump the Clearview Court tenants, and so forth. Back to street interviews and anything you may be wanting to tell me, 427-3772. Call in.
I got trouble brewing in my coffee pots. There's no sugar in my bowl. Well, the tax man came and gave it all away. My head is pounding. No, Bill, don't ever stop. Got no dog for my bone. And somebody said, supposed to be another gravy day today. Been twisted and broken. Things just ain't what they used to be. Been twisted and broken.
We're talking with
Mark.
And Mark, what's cooking?
Well, I have a friend of mine had an RV up on the west side, you know, going in at night, leaving in the morning. And one night the cops not only banged all over his RV, you know, bashing in the aluminum. But then they decided to grab it and shake it, trying to wake him up. And they, when they couldn't get him, then just a couple days ago, they came over and they pulled his door open. I don't know if that's illegal to do to a car or fucking, or pardon my language, but to an RV. But they actually pulled his door open. It wasn't locked, but still. And, like, flashed a flashlight inside the RV and grabbed him and got a camping ticket.
What time of night was it?
Like 5 in the morning.
And how many police did he say how many there were?
He said it was just one.
Did you say who it was?
No, not a fan. I can find out from the ticket later, though. I will find out for sure, because that's just out of hand. You know, he doesn't even be pulling doors open and stuff on RVs. That's somebody's house.
And did the police officer say there had been a complaint?
That's what he said. But, you know, they just, you know, when they see an RV on the side of the road, you know, it's just talking. It was over on the west side.
We don't know where, though.
No, not a fan. What street it was, no. But, you know, it's, you know, exactly. You know, they see an RV on the west side, it's like red flag.
Yeah. Well, you know, you don't want the wrong kind of people on the west side.
Well, you know, as long as they leave in the morning, who cares? You know?
Well, we don't want their kind over there.
Well, you know what? They used to be their kind at one time and made their money.
Was years ago. Time
come on now. Yeah, right, exactly. You know what? They tried to make their life so fucking perfect that they don't even know poor people anymore.
Well, why bother? The poor people are, should we say, miles away.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
They're trying to get their kind,
you know,
out of town.
I told you, they strive to make a more perfect world, and they did so good they don't even know a poor person anymore over there.
You see, they're doing a fine job.
They're
I see what
a
your
great
problem
job.
Is.
Thanks, Robert.
Your friend might want to give a call to Huff 423 Huff and report the ticket. But anybody with a bowler hat, of course, will have to be, should we say, discriminated against and taken off to the side. Sir, you have a bowler hat on. What's your name?
My name is Brent Adams. I play a 55-gallon plastic drum. You know me. Come on.
I've seen you before, Brent. But without your drum, you're not as recognizable as you might be.
That is true. You know, Mike Posner the other day said, I look like a smaller man without my drum. Really hurt. So I'm working out.
Now, what about, you've got to buff yourself up here. You've heard about the latest anti-war capers of the California Highway Patrol?
I don't know what you're talking about.
Well, there's been a protest the last couple of weeks on the Brant-Safforti overpass. Sherry Connable has written in a letter recently that they're abandoning their protest over the overpass because they're afraid they might be ticketed by the California Highway Patrol.
That's too bad. They're afraid they're going to be ticketed by the highway?
No, that was the threat of a California Highway Patrol officer last week.
I'm always afraid I'm going to be ticketed by a California Highway Patrol. That doesn't change my behavior much, but well, I think that was a great spot. I saw them when I was driving under. I have a car I was driving, but I saw them, and it was a big impact. I thought it was really cool. I'm sorry to hear that they're stopping
Some of those ne'er-do-wells may show up on Friday between 5 and 6 at the Brant-Safforti overpass anyway.
Oh, cool. I support them. I hope they do that. I've got to go to work.
Oh, be that way.
At that time of day. Otherwise, I'd be there. Yeah.
Any reports from the street about what's happening downtown?
Lots of music is happening downtown. I don't know what's going on, to tell you the truth. I saw a man riding the wrong way on his bicycle, and
Officer Bechtel, perhaps?
Oh, yeah, check it out. Air Bechtel did not
Bechtel?
Did not ticket the
did
person.
Did not?
This could be a historic Mark's back in town.
Mark's back in town. I've noticed that, yes.
I don't have much to report. I'm hanging out with my girlfriend and her friend from New York. It's having a nice time. Good to see you, as always.
This is getting pretty trivial, I must say.
Well, thank you, Brent. It's always a pleasure.
Thank you. So, Mark, getting back to your story about the West Side guy who got, shall we say, the undesirable who invaded the West Side with his questionable vehicle. What happened there?
Well, the cop, after he opened his door, he did announce, but he opened the door without any type of problem, you know, like without the guy letting him in. And then when the guy said, hey, look, the armory's full, the policeman said that, no, it wasn't. And I was just wondering, did they get a memo? Do they know if the armory's full or not? The police, I mean, they would know, huh? So that's the only thing I was saying. He was like, what do you mean it's not full? You know, it's full. It's got to be full.
Frequently, the armory has been full a lot in the last month, so I don't know if the police officer was accurate in his statement. No doubt there's some evenings where it hasn't been, but I don't think he would necessarily know that.
I'm wondering, how does he, do they give him a bulletin, you know?
It would be useful because, in fact, one of the things we're looking for is for the Santa Cruz to follow what's called the Pottinger decision of Miami, which states in Miami that they cannot arrest or even talk to a homeless person about a shelter issue, like for a ticket, or a quality of life ticket, like even, you know, let's say warming yourself at a fire, public nakedness, over, unless they have a shelter bed available to offer that person.
Well, you know, I believe in that too. You know, like New York, where they put you in a shelter, whether you like it or not, if it's like below a certain degree of temperature, you know, because compassion to me, what happened to the 50-gallon drums with the fires on the corner?
Well, get your $50 drum and we'll show up.
Well, you know what I'm saying? With a fire on the corner. That's what I want to see, you know, nowadays. A cup of coffee.
Well, things have gotten kind of cold in Santa Cruz.
Yeah, exactly. God bless, bro.
So I'm talking to Sharon. What's your name?
Sharon Pate.
Sharon, you came to a Huff meeting a week ago, and then you came to the Huff meeting today. Why was that?
I received a camping ticket a couple of weeks ago, and a friend of mine told me about you guys, that you had a good strategy for how to beat a ticket, and I don't believe in that I should have to pay a fine for sleeping. I think sleeping should be everybody's birthright.
All right, well, I don't know if we have a good strategy, but we'd like to fight them, and we like to raise the issue of how unfair it is and how abusive it is if people are have no choice but to sleep outside.
Right, and I'd like to join in with that, and I mean, worst comes to worst, I might have to pay the ticket, but if I can beat it and help, you know, towards ending the sleeping ban, I'd love to do that.
Now, what were the circumstances of your ticket?
I was sleeping in my car at the gym, and about 1:30 in the morning, a police officer came and knocked on my window. And
you're a member of the gym?
Yes, I've been a member there for 8 years.
So you were on the property with their permission?
Right, but they never said that I could or could not sleep there, the gym people, but the property owner has a different feeling about that. She's the one that's...
So she came over with the cop, or...?
Not at 1:30 in the morning, it was just the cop, but she had made the complaint, or she's been ongoing making complaints. It's like we've kind of been tough, you know, she's been trying to get us out of there for a long time. And
how do you know that?
Because the police every once in a while have come and said, you can't sleep here, and we go and disappear for a few days and come back.
Well, you think that if the property owner had that requirement, they would tell that it was a 24-hour fitness?
Yeah, that was always my feeling, is if she's leasing the property to the 24-hour fitness, why are they not saying anything about it? Why is it, you know, if she, to me, it should be out of her hands. If it's their property, it's up to them. As long as the property is still intact when they return it to her, it's not no damage done, I don't see what her complaint is about.
Well, there's no sign in 24-hour fitness, you can't sleep here. Members are not allowed to sleep on the property.
There's a sign that says parking for 24-hour fitness, members only, 3-hour limit. But that kind of conflicts with my membership agreement, which says I have unlimited use. So I could be in the gym 24 hours a day, and if I was, my car would be parked in that lot. So
have you ever asked the management what their policy is?
No, I haven't. I didn't want to commit to that I was out there.
you might ask theoretically what their policy is.
Yeah, I'll have to try that.
So how long have you been a member of 24 Hour Fitness?
About 8 years.
And have you frequently slept in your car on their property?
Yeah, that's been for the last, I'd say, 3 years. That's been my main place that I sleep. Once in a while, when the cops come through, then I, you know, go away for a while to another spot. But I usually end up coming back there. It's pretty comfortable because it's a place where I can go in and use the bathroom if I have to. I mean, because I know I've heard that there's been complaints other places that homeless people go to the bathroom outside and stuff. I didn't have to do that there. I have a place to take a shower, go in and do my workout and everything.
And you're a single woman. Do you feel safe there?
Yeah. My brother was also camping there nearby, and other people I knew, and it felt very safe. Now I'm having to go off by myself and find some place by myself, and I'm feel a little bit frightened. I don't have a van. I'm in a car where you can look in the window and just see me sleeping there, and I feel kind of vulnerable.
Now, you said you had a conversation with Officer Perry, also known as RoboCop, the African-American officer?
Yes, yesterday morning.
What happened in that conversation?
He came through with the owner of the property, and they were checking out another vehicle first, and after they finished with that vehicle, the property owner left, and then Officer Perry came over to me, thanked me for not sleeping in the gym parking lot that night, or the previous night, and said that he knew where I was sleeping and that he hadn't bothered me and wouldn't so long as I kept moving around.
So, what did you think of his assurance? Did you feel reassured?
Somewhat, but not really. A little bit. I mean, he didn't hassle me that night. He didn't promise, though, that another police officer wouldn't bother me. He just said that he wouldn't. And, yeah, I don't know how much of it to believe. But it, just there was some comfort that he didn't hassle me that night. You know, it's like beyond that, I don't really know how much more I can, you know, believe out of that.
But you do have a ticket you're going to court on.
Yes, I do.
And you're planning to disqualify referee Basket?
Yes, Kim Basket.
170.6 CCP?
Yeah, peremptory challenge, yes.
Well, I wish you luck with that challenge. Anything you want to add?
Just everybody that gets a ticket, keep fighting it. And hopefully we'll get rid of that stupid ordinance. I want to thank you guys, too, for helping me out. I'm really glad that Bruce turned me on to you guys.
Thanks, Sharon.
Thank you.
Roger, what's the good word? I see you have on a U.S. Uncle Sam hat. You're riding your standard bike for two, and you haven't been seen hiding or hair of the last few weeks. What's happening?
Everything's happening, and we're all part of it. That's always the answer to what's happening.
Any word from our pals at the Vets for Peace and the sleeping ban resolution there?
Yes, only Robert Hall and Richard Anderson and me showed up for the meeting today, so still we haven't had a full discussion. But as soon as we get the people mustered together, we're going to move it through discussion.
Until then, it's perfectly okay for the city to go harass people who are sleeping, according to Vets for Peace.
No, they made no definitive statement like that at all.
They are making no statement against it, and they haven't since October, correct? Even though it was presented to them at that time. Or was it November? I'm not sure. I'm not attacking you. I'm attacking this group, frankly.
Yeah, and getting paperwork completed and resolutions by any group takes time,
as you know.
Other than your group, Crank went out pretty quick.
A one-sentence statement that they oppose the sleeping ban might not be that hard to get out. I don't understand what the difficulty is if they want to do something.
Well, as I just told you, we didn't have a full quorum today of all
What's
the people.
A full quorum?
Well, at least if a decent number of people shows up would be good enough.
I'm sure you've had a full quorum at some time in the last three months.
That's true.
It's not been done. What about the resolution on Iraq, the U.S. out of Iraq resolution to the city council?
I thought that was done. Did they not do that?
No. No, of course not.
I'll get back with you on that.
Well, I don't know. Maybe the Vets for Peace has. The city council hasn't even appeared on an agenda yet.
I thought they were on the February 8th agenda.
No.
I'll find out. If not,
they weren't on the February 8th agenda. What about the benches that were removed by the Parks and Rec from in front of the Vets Hall?
Not sure.
All right, Uncle Sam, with your hat, get to work.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Roger. We're talking with
Carrie Kira, you're doing some singing tonight?
Yes, I am.
Why are you singing with these ne'er-do-wells?
Because I'm homeless and it gives me a bit of joy.
Well, yeah, but if you're homeless, why don't you move to a cheaper area and stop cluttering up the area?
Well, you know, I was born and raised in this town, and I have every right to be here, as does everybody else who comes here. And the fact that they want to ban us from sleeping is inhumane.
Are you yourself sleeping illegally at night?
When I miss the armory bus, yes. I have to walk around all night because I get harassed by the police saying that I can't stay there, I can't stay there. So I walk around all night, which is unsafe for me.
And you actually are in that situation tonight, right?
Yes, I am.
And you chose to do that because you wanted to be a part of this musical, political event?
Well, I missed my bus to the armory, and they won't let you in unless you ride the bus. They don't care anyway. You have to ride the bus up or you miss it. But at least this gave me some joy tonight when I thought it was going to be pure despair.
And what? Any comments about the armory? How long have you been up there? How many nights would you say?
I've only been homeless for a couple of weeks now. So 2 weeks worth of the armory.
And how is it up there for a single woman?
It's harsh because they don't care about you. All they look at you is being a homeless person, they look down at you. In fact, one of the security guards working there said, oh, you're just homeless. It must be what you want. They don't know me. They don't know my situation. They don't care. But yet, they'll sit there and degrade me.
How much waiting time is involved in getting up to the armory and coming back? How long do you spend in line, that sort of thing?
The lines aren't that bad. But you have to be there at 4 o'clock to sign in or you miss it.
And what time do you leave the armory in the morning?
At 6:15 is the first bus, and we have to wake up by 5:30 and get everything ready and wait 45 minutes. And then the second bus is at 6:45.
How are the sleeping conditions? There have been some complaints. Well, I've had some concerns, I guess, either expressed or imagined that there's, you know, people coughing in this one big room, that there's a lot of kind of sharing of potentially contagious diseases.
Oh, very much so. You know, people are sick and they're not getting the care that they need because Santa Cruz won't offer it because we're just lowlifes in their eyes. So they don't offer it. And everybody up there is coughing and sick during the winter months. And so, yeah, of course, it's all around. You have to just hope that you don't get sick.
How are the armory authorities treating you?
As a homeless degenerate.
Well, you look pretty degenerate to me.
Thank you. Yeah.
Very
they make me. They make me feel that way. Although during the day before I get there, I feel like a normal human being, and when I get there, I'm made to feel like a lowlife.
And how do they do that?
They do that, like I said, by them calling me homeless and that I must want that.
I mean, this is an occasional comment or a regular comment or?
Very regular, almost every night. Yeah. Why are you here? Oh, you must be on drugs or alcohol. They don't know my situation. They don't know me. And even if I were on drugs or alcohol, who cares? You know, who cares? They don't. There's not a rule book that says you can only go up there if you're drugs or alcohol or this or that. But yet they sit there and they treat you like crap.
How do men treat the women in the armory among the homeless?
Well, it's okay because we're all in the same boat together. And I find that there's a lot of respect amongst homeless people, more so than I would get from a so-called normal person walking along the street. You know, we're all in this together and we band as brothers.
How about the homeless service center? Do you ever spend much time there?
I've done a few things there. I stay not in the actual 30-day homeless shelter, but on the lot next to it. And they treat you like crap, too.
How so?
They don't want you there. They consider you like, when are you getting out of here? Or, you know, why are you here? And it shouldn't be questioned why I'm there. I'm homeless. I'm there.
And what kind of comments or what's the most recent example of this that's come up?
The most recent example would be, you don't look like a homeless person, so what are you doing here? Are you an undercover cop?
Who said that to you?
Some of the volunteer staff.
These are homeless people or formerly homeless people or just
They're
volunteers?
Homeless. Yeah, the staff, most of the staff there are homeless.
Do you find that homeless people who become staff members tend to, should we say, quickly get into power trips?
Yeah, but I feel that it's because of their fear. There's something that they fear that they're projecting onto me.
What kind of fear are they projecting onto you?
I think it's a fear of that they don't want to be homeless either, but they don't know how to get out of it, and this is just my opinion. And so by me showering, going out and applying for jobs, they think that I'm not one of them. And it's a fear. We're fearful. Where are we going to sleep? What are we going to eat? What are we going to do? How do people perceive us? You know, it's tough walking down the street and being a homeless person because people either look at you with pity or they look at you with contempt.
Or perhaps with fear.
With fear, yeah, because it one day could be them. Or they just don't look at you at all because they don't want to see what maybe could happen to them.
What kind of work do you do when you're working?
Anywhere from retail sales to receptionist. My goal is to be a writer.
What kind of writing do you do?
I would actually like to write a book about compassion, and if I can change one person's mind, then I feel I've done a good job.
Cool. We've been talking with...
Carrie.
Thanks, Carrie. Okay, it's 8:55. I'm at the Fosters here, and we have two squad cars half blocking a line of traffic in the street. Two officers are questioning two individuals, actually three officers. One is a canine car. And hi. And we have, as I said, squad cars 165, 126 are here questioning these, a man and a woman who are seated at a table here at Foster's. What's happening?
I just got here. You got this covered?
No. Well, you just got here. What are you?
I got to go to the studio to do a free radio show, though. So
okay.
If you're watching.
Okay, I'm keeping an eye. Looks like a man's being handcuffed now. We don't know what the charge is. What's the charge? What's the charge? The woman is being taken to the squad car by an officer. It's hard to tell what's going on. There's three cars here again, parked blocking a, nearly blocking a lane of traffic. Anything you want to say for free radio? Any comment? Any comment for free radio?
This is Santa Cruz. I've been here all my life, and he's doing the job.
Okay. What's your name?
Thank you.
Okay, what's the charge?
That was great. That was very nice of you.
Okay, so the police are grateful that the handcuffed man has said that they're just doing their job, and I can't say otherwise. Of course, if I were handcuffed being taken into custody, I might say the same thing. And a card is given to the suspect by another witness who's actually a free radio broadcaster heading for free radio. What's your name?
I'm DJ Danielson.
And you're off to free radio.
I am indeed. Self-Defense 101, Wednesday nights at 9.
And you know, there's an anti-war rally on campus tonight. That's where I'm headed.
Really?
Yeah, tomorrow night there's an anti-war teach-in. Tonight there's an anti-war presentation, a forum.
I need to get in the campus loop, I guess.
I guess so. I'm going to find out what's going on. Maybe I'll give you a call. You're on the. When is your show on?
9 to 11.
I'll try to call you.
In the studio.
All right, man. So, again, we're at the corner of Laurel and Cedar Streets. I'm right at the corner where the Fosters is. There are two squad cars, one half blocking Cedar Street, the other half blocking Laurel Street, and then a third squad car up the street a bit at the other end of the Fosters on Laurel Street. And the there's one suspect in the car with... She's a woman. She's handcuffed in the back of squad car 126, which is the car blocking, kind of angled on Laurel Street. The male suspect is seated on the guy is seated on the front of the bumper of the squad car 165, which is a canine car. There's a dog in the back of that car. You may have heard that dog earlier. And he's being questioned here essentially in the street and blocking the crosswalk. It's not clear why the police have felt it necessary to create this situation here, because there doesn't seem to be any emergency, but the police are, in fact, doing this. It's not clear to me why this is happening this way. Again, we have two male officers and a female officer doing this. I don't see their badges and numbers, and I'm just watching. The time is about 9 o'clock on Wednesday evening. And the canine car is actually on. The motor is on, has been for the last 15 minutes. Peculiar. The lights are flashing on the overhead. Blue, white, and red top light, the squad car light that flashes. Actually, both cars are flashing, but I think only car 165, the canine car, is actually on. And there's virtually nobody else here. There is, of course, Foster's is open as for business as usual. It's a chilly evening, and occasionally you get folks walking by, kind of checking out the scene, but just sort of standing here leaning against the newspaper rack on the corner. The sign says no parking bike lane, but we have two police cars here blocking the lane and blocking the street. Not clear why this isn't being done in the parking lot, but no doubt there's... Well, there may not be an explanation for it other than those who have the power do what they choose to do. It's a fairly busy street. A lot of cars are going back and forth. This is an intersection where there's no stop sign, but there is a left turn lane onto Cedar Street. And the police are being friendly to the man who's seated on the bumper of the car, handcuffed with a white cap on. And the guy is asking if a police officer whom he knows is still working with him. I couldn't hear most of the conversation, so I can't really tell you what's going on specifically. And it's a friendly banter between police officers and suspect. But again, the man is handcuffed, and his associate, female associate, is in the car. And again, these cars are in the road with flashing lights, three of them, and three officers. It's not clear what kind of emergency requires blocking traffic in this fashion, or requires the three officers to devote their attention to one individual. Who knows? Maybe it's a major terrorist plot. It's kind of hard to tell. But somehow I doubt it. And a police officer moves to block my view of the suspect. That's the older officer with gray hair and glasses. So I'm kind of positioning myself so I can try to hear what's going on. So it appears it could be nothing more than a warrant, but it's not clear what's going on. And frankly, I don't know if I'm going to find out more by staying here. And frankly, I have an interest in checking out the anti-war forum on campus. That's where I'm headed.
Hi, I'm looking to get the porter to the forum up there.
You need to go over to the west gate. The
okay.
Way you get there, just turn around here, out of the signal, make a right-hand turn, a little over a mile up on the right-hand side.
And that's me trying to get into the UCSC campus at night. It's you get grilled as you come through the gates, and we'll see what happens tonight. There's an anti-war rally on campus at Classroom Unit 2 tonight from 8 to 10, if anybody's interested. That's it for Bathrooms Piers Broadsides tonight. I want to thank you all for listening in. I think we're going to have better times on the phone. Uncle Dennis has come in and has fixed the phone. So instead of clicking back and forth, we're actually going to be able to talk to people directly next show, which is going to be Sunday, 9:30 for me. So come in on the, give me a call then. And also check out the freeway tomorrow between 5 and 6 and see how the California Highway Patrol is dealing with your First Amendment rights over the Branch of 40 exit of the freeway. Thanks for being with me on this edition of Bathrooms Piers Broadsides.
As your Uncle Dennis, we're hanging with you here tonight on Free Radio Santa Cruz, www.freakradio.org and 101.1 in the local airwaves. Be here until 11 o'clock. We got lots of music from the 60s and 70s. We got the Earth First Update at 9 o'clock, and we got Uncle Dennis's Wrap at 10. And, of course, as always, we'll be introducing the Brew of the Week here shortly.
To my love, took it down. I climbed a mountain and I turned around. And I saw my reflection in snow-covered hills till the landslide brought me down. Oh, mirror in the sky, what is love? Can the child in my heart rise above? Can I sail through the changing ocean tides? Can I handle the seasons of my if you see my reflection in the snow-covered hills.